I can remember when Joram first was in Hungary in 2019, when his book was Virtue of Nationalism was published in Hungarian, and he had a wonderful meeting with Prime Minister Orbán. We immediately realized that we Hungarians have been national conservatives even before we realized that such notion exists. So we are national conservatives for like 1,100 years, which is quite something. But NatCon and the movement behind national conservatism, it has been really a huge inspiration for us for years. I hope that Hungary and the Hungarians can also be an inspiration for you as well. Right now, the situation is better in Hungary than in the US, for sure. Let's go Brandon versus two-third majority for like 11 years. So you understand different, you understand that the tone is a bit different. But this shows that national conservatism can be an effective ideological foundation for everyday policy making. So we are not just talking about ideas, we are not just talking about brilliant intellectuals. We in Hungary, we are using these principles in everyday policy making for like 11 years, and we are extremely successful with that. If I'm here in United States, I always have to say that we are very grateful to American people, grateful for your support. We will never forget that you hosted refugees after our revolution against the Soviet occupation in 1956. You were the ones who hosted the political refugees back at that time. But right now, we are also happy to have you in Hungary. If you want to live in a free, stable country, openly supporting traditional values and encouraging families. So if you need any political refuge, please don't hesitate to ask for it after the lecture. And it's funny that it is true the other way around. We expected the American troops to come and save us in 1956, but they didn't do so. Right now, we don't want to be saved by the rainbow flag, but they still want to do so. So the conflict is obviously there. But let's be serious. I mentioned you that national conservatism and as an ideology, it works in everyday practice. Let me give you some proof about Hungary. Right now, economy is boosting extraordinary performance, 7.5 GDP growth this year, one of the best performing EU member states. Taxes are lowered every year, every month. We are refunding $2 billion of income taxes for families, waivers on personal income tax for women raising four children, strong belief that work and not government benefits should be the foundation of healthy societies. We are subsidizing housing loans and to young people. So if you want to have a family and you want to have three children, you can get through subsidies as loans around $200,000 from the Hungarian state as a support. We spend 6.2% of our GDP to our family policy. The fertility rate went up from 1.2, which was the lowest in the whole Europe, to 1.6 in just 10 years' time without immigration. So the fertility rate is not rising because of immigration and immigrant population, but because of young Hungarian couples. 6.2%, that's the highest in all Europe. Three times the NATO defense investment guidelines. So families with men and women, and a boy and a girl, they are now the most effective weapons of the Hungarian military. So we truly believe in family policies. Safety, law and order, registered crimes from 350,000, they were dropped to 150,000 just in 10 years' time. crime detection from 38% to almost 70% went up. The migration issue, for sure. We were the first country who rejected illegal migration, stopped illegal migration completely, 100%. Contributed to the safety of Europe as a whole. It was a difficult time in 2015. We had to build a fence. As it was precisely said by Tucker Carlson, it's not a high-tech fence, but it works because there are committed people who are ready to protect it. And that's more important than physical infrastructure. Right now, approximately 3,000 people is caught and sent back at our southern borders on a week. Sovereignty, that's also a key issue, resisted the political pressure from Brussels, put sovereignty first, religion, renovated over 300 churches all around the Carpathian Basin, not only in Hungary, but in other neighboring countries, in Romania, Slovakia, Serbia as well. Christian churches, Jewish churches, complete religious freedom for everybody. We have a Jewish Renaissance in Hungary, and providing regular state support for all the churches and for religious schools. And obviously, there is the LGBTQ issue, stood up for the protection of our children by banning LGBTQ propaganda in our schools. We were heavily attacked by Brussels. But we will be the first country which can stop aggressive LGBTQ propaganda in front of our schools through the support of the grassroots people, because we announced that we will have a national referendum on this issue in springtime, so people can decide which direction they want to go, which never happened in any other Western country yet. So I can proudly say that Hungary is safe and sound and prospering. This is not something I can see in Western Europe. And that's the problem. I think that's the problem with us. That's why we are the black ships right now. We are different. We are conservative, religious, sovereigntists, and still successful. So we are the proof that things can go differently, that there is a way, and that's why they go really after us and they want to hunt us down politically from one after another. But we will survive. But anyway, let's finish up with Hungary. I want to really talk about today about liberalism and about some thoughts from my book and about European national conservatism.
This is the book.
Yes.
If you want it, it's...
Just turn it.
Oh. No, it's...
Upside down.
It's better this way.
No. Yeah.
Okay, you can get a copy.
Thank you very much. This is the book. I'm most proud of the cover. That's the only thing which wasn't done by me, but by an artist. He did a pretty good job. And it's a symbol about the stag is a mythological stag, which is very well known by the Hungarians, because according to our historical narrative, the Hungarian tribes who occupied the Carpathian Basin 1,100 years ago, they were led by this mythological stag. And the idea of the cover is that the stag is still with us in contemporary time in Budapest, and he leads us towards a better future or something like this. So that's the idea behind it. I hope you will enjoy it. But let's talk about liberalism and then Brussels and then differences between Anglo-Saxon and Central European conservatism. I think the biggest problem with contemporary liberalism right now, and we didn't touch this issue very well during the conference, is disregarding history. Liberals are still thinking that we have a Fukuyama moment, which means history is already ended. That's a mistake. They thought that they can govern every country located everywhere in the world, guided by the same principles and policies. which is actually wrong. Politics is not universal. It's very important understanding geopolitics, learning from your historical experiences, identifying the national interest. Every nation has a different national interest, for sure, and having a pragmatic as well a strategic approach. These are very important keys to success. Lack of this results in unsustainable economies, crisis, increasing number of crime, illegal immigration, disappearing middle class, fragmented societies, messed up international order, odd ideological crusade against anyone who dares to question the status quo and who is willing to think differently, and chaos that is unfortunately an everyday reality in Europe. If we talk about Europe and Brussels, let me start with the joke. What is a European paradise? Probably some of you already heard this joke. What is a European paradise? You are invited to an official lunch. You are welcomed by an Englishman. Food is prepared by a Frenchman, and an Italian puts you in a mood, and everything is organized by the Germans. Compared to that, what is European hell? You are invited to an official lunch. You are welcomed by a Frenchman. Food is prepared by an Englishman. German puts you in a mood. But don't worry, everything is organized by Italians. Yeah, exactly. But I'm not finished yet. That joke was proposed by a Belgian as an official European joke, the joke that every single European pupil should learn at school. The joke will improve the relationship between the nations as well as promote our self-humor and our culture. The European Council met in order to make a decision. Should the joke be an official European joke or not? The British representative announced, it's an old joke before Brexit, the British representative announced with a very serious face and without moving his jaw that the joke was absolutely hilarious. The French was protested because France was depicted in a bad way in the joke. He explained that the joke cannot be funny if it's against France. Poland also protested because they were not depicted in the joke. Luxembourg asked who would hold the copyright of the joke. Holland, they didn't get the joke. While Portugal didn't understand what a joke was. Was it a new concept? Spain explained that the joke is funny only if you know that the lunch was at but 1 p.m., which is normally breakfast time. Greece complained that they were not aware of that lunch. Romanians then asked what the lunch was. Lithuania and Latvia complained that their translators were inverted, which is translations were inverted, which is unacceptable, even if it happens all the time. Slovakia announced that unless the joke was about a little duck and a plumber, there was a mistake in their translation. The British representative said that the duck and the plumber story seemed very funny too. Hungary had not finished reading the 120 pages of its own translation yet. To close the meeting, the German representative announced that it was nice to have a debate here in Brussels, but that now they all had to make the train to Strasbourg in order to take a decision. He asked that someone to wake up the Italian so as not to miss the train, so they can come back to Brussels and announce the decision to the press before the end of the day. What decision? Asked the Irish representative. And they all agreed it was time for some coffee. So that's the joke. Quite long, but yeah. Thank you. So, I think, in a way, it's obviously a tragedy that we Europeans are acting like this. But I think it's also part of our culture and part of our proudness that we Europeans are do like this. We are different, and the tragedy, the real tragedy. And the real joke is not that we are like this, because that's everyday reality. But the real tragedy and the real joke is currently Brussels is working on finish this whole thing up. They don't want to maintain these kind of differences. They don't want to preserve national differences. They just fed up with everything what is mentioned in the joke. They just want to have a homogeneous super state, which is obviously liberal, which is obviously woke, which is obviously serving a liberal international order or whatever. And if any single country and any single member state want to go to a different direction, want to have her own translation, then it's something bad and should be stopped immediately. And that's the real tragedy with contemporary European politics. And Europe as a whole, it wasn't based on this ideology. But there is a hope. Central Europe right now is doing pretty well. Western Europe is not so much. In Central Eastern Europe, even the liberals are conservatives. Like, think about Andrei Babiš, the Czech prime minister. He is a clear-cut liberal, but he is on our side with all these political debates. So even the liberals, so Central Europe makes even the liberals conservative. So if you have any liberal friend, please bring him or her to Central Europe, and then he or she will be fine. And I think there is a historical reason why it is so. Historically, Anglo-Saxon conservatism and obviously liberalism was more like an expansion type of ideology. Meanwhile, for Central Europeans, for the conservatives, and also for the classical liberals, defensiveness was more important than expansion. See, Central Eastern European region is more pragmatic. We had to protect ourselves. We were skeptical of new ideas. I would characterize Central European conservatism as a more pragmatic way of thinking. Why is that? I think the answer is in the defensive nature of Central Europe, which can explain by history, geography, and culture. Empires need ideology, core interest, spreading of the values. They had to identify values and ideas that were suitable for a wide spectrum of countries and nations, ranging from England to India. Individual rights and liberty became the lowest common denominator. And geopolitics is also important. Anglo-Saxon countries, they are mainly coastline countries, while Central European states often landlocked. Anglo-Saxons, they are engaged with a variety of different nations and culture. Meanwhile, Central Eastern Europeans feared invasions, tried to maintain a stricter social structure, law and order, remain skeptical on foreign ideas, and fought for their survival. It even affected by the culture, modernity, enlightenment, and industrial revolution has fundamentally changed the ways we live our lives. For the Anglo-Saxon, these phenomena were a direct result of their cultural development. In Central Europe, modernity was a foreign phenomenon that threatened to change our way of life. The dilemma for us was either reject modernity, keep your nation identity intact, and risk being defenseless from modern, better performing competitors, versus you embrace modernity, risking to lose your national identity. The CEE answer was very clear. We tried both, embrace modernity while also preserving national identity. We would only do this through a pragmatic approach, interpreting all new ideas and ideologies through the lens of national interest. If it threatens your national interest, we either adjust the ideology or drop it. For the first time, what happened with the Anglo-Saxon world? For the first time in the last 500 years, the Western civilization, including Anglo-Saxon countries, need to follow a defensive approach. Their competitors are becoming better, with similar economic performance requiring pragmatism on our side. At the same time, conservatives are trying to go with the flow, become more and more mainstream. The leaders are losing ground. They are not courageous enough to stand for the things they believe in. They have to toughen up, be more resilient, and be more uncompromising. They should know that what politics is about. It is not an international popularity contest where the result is determined by the leftist media. Their priority should be to serve their people, put national interest first, and explore new ideas through the lens of these interests. Now I really want to finish up. As I'm sure you know that Hungary is a horrible dictatorship, an autocracy where the opposition's candidate is likely to win, at least according to CNN. I have never heard of an authoritarian regime where the opposition wins, or a free and fair election is held for the matter, but I don't think CNN cares about such minor details. Thank God that we only have to convince our citizens and not the liberal media. But one thing is true, election will be held in Hungary in 2022, April. I'm optimistic, but we welcome and appreciate any support you might give to us. And I think there is hope. Let me finish by sharing a personal story with you. I was here in the United States before the elections 2016. The popular opinion, including every Republican leading DC expert, was that Trump has no chance. He will definitely not make it. That's what we heard from the liberal media as well. And then we visited not only DC, but also Cleveland. And there was a Hillary Clinton rally in Cleveland with LeBron James on the stage. Meanwhile, in the other stadium, there was an NFL game. We also wanted to participate in that. So first the NFL match, where there were 80,000 people. And then we went to the other stadium where Hillary rally was with LeBron James on the stage. And there were only 500 people. And all the people were paid, except us. Quite dumb, but still, that was the case. And that was the first time when I realized, something is very different than it is portrayed in the media and it is portrayed by DC experts. And then we went down to Florida and we visited the Victory Center, and I asked the lady who was in charge at the small Victory Center working for Trump stuff, that who's going to win? And she answered, she gave me a cardboard with Trump pens and told me that hold this and figure out yourself. So I went out, I hold the cardboards, and all the cars stopped immediately and started to cheer and started to express support and tell go Pence, go Trump, let's go guys. So that was the moment. That was the first moment when I realized that this day, that day will end up very differently. That it was again portrayed by everybody else. That realized that the media creates an extreme discrepancy between our perceptions and reality. Realize that if you are standing on the right side of history, people will understand and honor you with their trust and support. So I wish the same thing for all of us on both sides of the Atlantic. Thank you very much for being me here.